Today's podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
All right, let's get it going right here, right now. This is Diamond Conversations, and you're listening to episode 5 of Diamond Conversations on the Place to Be Nation podcasting network. If you didn't know by now, my name is Chad, and every single week, you're going to get a brand new interview from somebody involved with the game of baseball in any capacity we can get it to you, whether it is a former player, whether it is a former writer, announcer, commentator, anybody who wants to talk about this game, this wonderful game of baseball, America's pastime, is going to be joining me on the air here on Diamond Conversations, 5 weeks strong so far, and this week, taking a big plunge into the 1981 baseball season of the Columbus Clippers and talking to author J. David Herman about his book, Almost Yankees, The Summer of 81 and the Greatest Baseball Team You Never Heard Of. Now, as we kind of look into doing research for these books or some of these authors that come on the show, it's always very cool to look at something you maybe not know that much about. And in this case, for me, it was the 1981 Columbus Clippers. And right away, it's looking at names that pop off the page and looking at guys that, yeah, I've heard of, I've seen them play, or I've read about them, or I've seen a baseball card with their picture on it. But this book gives you great insight into guys that maybe never got the chance to get past that big stage of Columbus and on to the New York Yankees. But it also gives you the opportunity to learn more about the guys that did, but see their kind of humble beginnings. And that's kind of what Almost Yankees brings to you, because J. David Herman, the author, just takes you on a personal journey back into his childhood, watching this team. It was his hometown team. And without giving much away in the actual book, talks about his love of the franchise and talks about what the Clippers meant to him growing up and the bond that he had with his dad and going to the games and getting to see these blossoming players and seeing what they were and what they would be. And he tells you very personal stories in the book about it all. And it's something that I felt very, very happy and elated to be able to have this on the airwaves and to bring this out today with this podcast episode. I think you'll see as well that it's a great story as a whole, not just for the baseball, but also from the actual look into the author's past and see what baseball means to him, because baseball is a very personal sport. And just from my own perspective, with the kind of passion that I'm trying to put into this show on a weekly basis, it's really cool to talk to somebody that has that same passion and has that same kind of fire to put this out to the masses. And obviously, this book is a wonderful pickup, and we'll have all the plugs for you inside the episode. But don't sleep on looking into that 1981 season, the strike-shortened Major League Baseball season, the Columbus Clippers really taking a big stage and getting the chance to perform on a national platform as ESPN at the time, just a budding sports network, made their way down to Columbus and recorded some games and was able to broadcast that and gave people the opportunity to see. There was baseball out there. There was baseball that was actually taking place. It might not have been those major leaguers that eventually would come back and there would be a kind of second half played. But the 81 baseball season, almost in doubt, the Columbus Clippers and this 81 team really provided a great, just a great outlet for baseball fans to kind of live that season through these players getting the chance to really show what they had. And obviously the next step would be to move on to the New York Yankees from the Columbus Clippers being a AAA affiliate at the time. But without giving any more away from the actual book and taking away from the story, if you're a Yankee fan, the names that you hear will be absolutely just a walk down memory lane. And I'm not just talking about the guys like Dave Righetti. I'm talking about guys like Andre Robertson or even former manager Buck Showalter being on this team and being a part of it. And one cool aspect of it, and I will give this last little thing away, that J. David Herman gets to talk to literally almost the whole team for this book and get comments from guys that played, and it's a huge percentage of the team. I mean, it's really only missing a few of the guys that he was trying to get in touch with, but it's a first-hand account from somebody who watched it and then those players that actually lived it. So it's something that if you get your hands on the book, you'll really enjoy because it's a great baseball story. And I will leave it at that before we get it on over to the interview. Just want to touch back to last week's episode with the Fredericksburg Nationals GM, Nick Hall. He had mentioned the reveal of the uniforms for the Fredericksburg Nationals. It took place this past weekend. They look very cool, but still no mention of the mascot that he said they weren't sure what the actual concept was going to be. They're still holding off till 2020 to reveal what the mascot is, but kind of coming out of this interview, it was funny to see the reaction of some Nationals fans that were very sad to see the Potomac Nationals mascot Uncle Slam departing and being retired. So a little cool piece of news coming out of last week's episode. If you haven't heard it, obviously, take a listen back. It was actually cool to be live in the Fredericksburg Nationals offices and conduct the interview, but also to see when they revealed the jerseys that little steps are making its way to the 2020 season. And we'll see so much more revealed when the stadium is unveiled and then as the roster takes shape, see who's going to be coaching for Fredericksburg. So it's very cool to see a kind of like on my home turf here, you know, a budding franchise, just starting from scratch, really, in a new home. So very cool. If you haven't heard it, go back and listen. Appreciate it if you did. So if you want to get in touch with me on social media, you can check out both the Diamond Conversations Twitter page. It's at DiamondConverse1, as well as my own personal page. Little change to that. It's actually Chad Ian B on Twitter. Again, it's Chad Ian B. And on Facebook, it's Diamond Conversations Baseball Podcast. Like the page, see the links. If you're listening on Place to Be Nation, then you already know where to find us every Tuesday. And we appreciate that. Thank you so much for listening. And we'll look forward to catching you on the flip side with my guest today, J. David Herman, talking a little Almost Yankees, the summer of 81, and the greatest baseball team you've never heard of. Joining me back here on Diamond Conversations, we got another great interview in store for you today as I welcome in author J. David Herman talking about his book, Almost Yankees, the Summer of 81 and the Greatest Baseball Team You've Never Heard Of. This book is absolutely fascinating and I am very happy to be joined today by the author J. David Herman. Mr. Herman, thank you for joining me.
You bet. I'm really glad to be on. Thanks for your interest in the book and for the kind words.
Oh, my pleasure. It's a fascinating topic. And this is my favorite part about doing this podcast is finding these stories out there, finding unique baseball stories that catch somebody's attention. Maybe not necessarily because of who you're talking about or what team you're talking about, just something different. And when I saw your book title and I started to read the sample that's out there on Amazon, I fell in love with it because I love that it's something you're passionate about. And we're going to talk about it here. But the 1981 Columbus Clippers, who were a Yankee affiliate, you know, if you can tell us about how the concept of the book came and kind of what brought you to writing this book, Almost Yankees.
You bet. Well, I'll tell you, the 1981 Columbus Clippers, there's a lot of great storylines about them. They were, a championship team for the third straight year in the International League and pennant and the postseason playoffs. You have all the Yankees intrigue in the shadow of that 81 team in Steinbrenner. The strike happened that year, so you had ESPN and the New York Times coming down to Columbus. And so there's a lot of great stuff, but the main reason that I love this team is this was my first favorite team. And it stuck with me all these years. It's that team that just really grabbed me and kind of sealed me as a baseball fan. I had a lot of great times going to those games with my dad, who the book is sort of done in honor of, I should say. And a few years ago, it just occurred to me, whatever happened to all these guys? You know, I know about your Steve Balbonis and your Dave Rigettis and some of the other guys that made the majors, but what about some of these other heroes of mine? Whatever happened to these guys? And Well, I had a lot of fun tracking them down, and I found most of them and talked to them, traveled around the country, interviewed them. How'd your life turn out? What was it like to come so close? And the more I got into it, the more I was just finding all these great stories, and it just kind of took off from there.
It's so cool, and that's my favorite part of the book, is all the different guys that you got to talk to. And, you know, you got your, you know, your quote, your sexy names here. You got, you know, your Righetti and Balboni and even Buck Showalter. But one name that I loved on there, too, another former major leaguer, and I'm a Mets fan. We've talked about this on the podcast before. But Pat Tabler, that guy who had a brief cameo with the New York Mets, another guy who was on this team and who was able to kind of chat about it. So tell me about going and actually finding the guys from the team. Was it a process that maybe you thought could be impossible? I know you didn't get everybody, but what was kind of the thought going into getting as many guys as you could for the book?
You know, I just sort of started. I think that was the best advice I got. A guy who, you know, was a good friend of mine and sort of a mentor, you know, when I was kind of doubting myself and I'm never going to be able to pull this off and I'm never going to find all these guys and, you know, I don't have the time, all those kind of doubts. You know, he just advised me, just get started. And that was great advice. And, you know, I reached out to a guy named Ken Schnocke, who is the president and general manager of the team, who I remembered from when I was a kid, hearing him talk on the radio, seeing him in the program. And, you know, he's running the whole show there now, still after all these years. He was a great starting point. Honestly, a lot of the guys were listed in the online white pages. The Major League Baseball Players Alumni Association was great. And, you know, there were some of them I had to really kind of, I mean, I'm a journalist by trade, and I had to kind of, you know, pull out all the stops and, you know, kind of track them down and, you know, see if I could get them to talk to me. And, you know, there are some good stories there, too, of just, you know, being persistent and finally getting a hold of some people that, I thought maybe were off the grid.
That's so cool. I mean, that really, to me, it's that's like a montage, you know what I mean? If this was a movie, you'd be going from town to town, you know, with a music bed behind you, going to each guy and getting their story. I think that is great. But you yourself as a baseball fan, what made you fall in love with the game of baseball?
Well, it hit me at a really, really great time. I was just kind of starting to get going as a sports fan in Columbus in 81, maybe a little bit of a late bloomer, but you know, it was an interesting summer for me. We were getting ready to move to California. There was, you know, I'm starting to grow up and my dad's gone for, you know, a good chunk of the summer getting ready to move us out there. And I had a lot of anxiety and, you know, baseball sort of showed up and was a friend to me. Those radio broadcasts and the times I got to actually go to the games and learning how to keep score and following along in the paper, learning how to read a box score, bringing my glove to games. It just hit me at the perfect time, and it captured my imagination. Another person who I really credit is a guy named Rick Riz, who was the Clippers play-by-play announcer back then, who just had and I write about this in the book, he just had a way of making it really fun and, you know, just kind of a fun sense of importance. And, you know, Rick's been doing Seattle Mariners games for most of the last 30-some years up here where I live now. And so that's always been kind of a treat. I always have a special place in my heart for Rick, and he's been very gracious as well. So it was a combination of things, but, you know, there's a jumping off point for the book, too, that is a walk-off grand slam, battle for first place, first night of the baseball strike. I was there with my dad at the stadium by a guy named Andre Robertson. And it's just one of those moments. You know, I describe it in depth in the prologue and the feeling of it and the excitement. And it's just an amazing thing. And I'll never forget it. And, you know, as I say, I can still hear my dad kind of off in my right ear, you know, cheering for that ball to clear that wall. And, you know, I think a lot of fans have that team that they first sort of fall in love with. But a lot of factors came into play for sure. And it was just a blast of a season and a fun team to watch.
That's a great name, Andre Robertson. He actually debuted for the Yankees in 81. So that was a pretty big year for Mr. Robertson there. But then talk about the stadium itself, Franklin County Stadium, and how much, you know, I look at Shea Stadium as a place that was like the Mecca to me. People always said it was a dump or whatever, but it was my dump. That was the place I like to go to watch Major League Baseball. But and on the minor league level, you know, the stadium itself is a personality and the people that gravitate to it. So kind of tell me about the stadium and what that meant to you as a fan growing up.
Sure, I'd love to. So Franklin County Stadium was built on sort of the remains of old Jets Stadium. The Columbus Jets had left town in the early 70s and moved to West Virginia, and the stadium sort of was crumbling. And a bunch of the, kind of leaders of Franklin County got together and hatched this kind of pretty incredible plan to get this thing financed and have a team return to Columbus. And they did this huge renovation. They basically tore down the rest of Jet Stadium down to almost nothing and rebuilt Franklin County. And it was real state of the art at the time. It was intimate. They did have AstroTurf, which was, I believe, a first for minor league team at that time. They just had a hard time getting the grass to grow in time. It was sort of a scramble, but they had that. They had a, at the time, state-of-the-art sort of Diamond Vision scoreboard, and it was just a wonderful atmosphere, just kind of warm Midwest vibe, warm nights, muggy nights. And, I don't know that there were really any bad seats in the house. And, you could go on Diamond Dog Night and, get hot dogs for super cheap. And it was a thrill to be there. I talk about that moment where you first kind of walk in and see that field. And that was where I really fell in love with that moment, was there and the buzz in the air. They could really get some good crowds for minor league baseball. And especially during the strike, when the majors were on hiatus, they would get big crowds, a lot of media attention. Again, ESPN broadcasting the games. There's a Clippers bell, the Bring Your Bell was kind of the theme. And, there's a song that they would play. It's been sort of phased out now with the new stadium. But Columbus Clippers Ring Your Bell, and everyone had these little cowbells that they would ring. And that was kind of fun. It drove the opposing teams crazy. They probably had heard enough of that, but yeah, it was just a blast, and to get to go there, with my dad was always a treat.
Who was the first player that you gravitated to watching that team? Was there somebody that stood out to you?
There really was. I liked, all of the players, but Marshall Brandt, who is a major character in the book, major figure in the book, I should say. He'd had this incredible season. He was the Topps Minor League Player of the Year in 1980. And again, part of the theme of this team is that these guys, a lot of them were stuck. George Steinbrenner, he wanted to win at all levels, so he stocked these teams, but there was very little upward mobility. He was addicted to high-priced free agents, and he wanted to go out and sign them. So these guys kind of burned out their careers, at least a lot of them did. And Brandt was one of those guys. He was had huge power numbers in the minors, and again, Topps Player of the Year in 80 for the minors. But he just always seemed to come through in the clutch, and he was a real heroic figure. He never refused an autograph. He was great with kids, really a hero in Columbus. He was a big favorite of mine, as was Dave Righetti, who was just lights out at the beginning of that season. He was 5-0 with a 1.00 ERA, forced his way onto the Yankees roster. They called him up in the middle of an outing. So I latched onto him right away as well. But Steve Balboni, of course, too, big kind of Bambino-esque guy, slugging these just powerful home runs. He was fun to watch for my dad and I. I saw him hit a 500-foot home run off Steve Bedrosian one night when Steve Bedrosian was with the Richmond Braves. And, boy, that was just people were slack-jawed. It was unbelievable.
Yeah, Brandt actually was a Met prospect as well. I've read about
he
him.
Sure
many,
was.
Yeah, for many times, big power bat. And that's really cool to see that that's a player that you gravitated to, because I actually just had a conversation with a minor league executive who was, we were talking about how do you connect to a minor league team, especially, I know the Columbus Clippers, they were affiliated with the Yankees for so long, but it's hard to, when you're in a major league market, you don't know what it's like to gravitate to a minor league team, because what if they switch affiliates? What if the guy gets traded out of the organization? It's kind of hard to keep track of them. Now, with Columbus being associated with the Yankees for so long, was it easy for you to become a Yankee fan, or was this just, were you just merely a Clippers fan?
It's interesting. I write in the book about how, the Clippers just seem so real to me and just right there. And I did get interested in the Yankees and Major League Baseball, but it was really about the Clippers that summer. And then, one of the subplots of the book is just that, here I am rabid for this team and I'm just loving it. And we moved. We left. We moved to California. And it was pre-internet, of course. I mean, this is 1981. There was really no way for me to follow how things worked out for that team, for the 81 Clippers. I couldn't just check on a laptop. I eventually, looked it up at some point, and they did win the Governor's Cup, they did win the pennant, but I never really knew much about the details of it. And so part of the, I'd say a subplot of the book is sort of unfinished business, whatever happened, and kind of filling in some of those gaps after the season as well as before. But what happened was we moved to Northern California, and I became a San Francisco Giants fan. That next season in 82, the Giants, who were sort of long suffering at that point, they had a pretty good season. It was the year that Joe Morgan, they didn't make the playoffs, but Joe Morgan knocked out the Dodgers with a dramatic home run. And so I was hooked as a Giants fan, and coming up to Seattle for many years now, I enjoy the Mariners as well. And I like to see the Yankees do well. I definitely maybe get some grief for this, but Yankees versus Red Sox, I would go more toward Yankees. I definitely enjoy it. I would really love it if, the Mariners could get something going. I got an 11-year-old son who he's the same age that I was when, in the season that I write about. And gosh, I'd love it if he'd have that special baseball fan moment, that would maybe kind of seal him as a fan like I was lucky enough to have.
That's kind of like the baseball shaping age. That's kind of the right time where it's let's make our decision on which way we're going to go with the rooting. And hey, if you're a Giants fan, you got to root for Rigetti again when he came back with the Giants later in his career, and obviously as a pitching coach.
Right. I mean, that was really a thrill for me. I mean, he's from San Jose, which is where I went to high school, and we moved there, to the town right over Saratoga. So that was a lot of fun. Also, Balboni wound up until a few weeks ago, the Giants let him go, but he had a long tenure as an advanced scout for them and was a big part of their success in their recent World Series. There are definite connections to the Giants for sure. So it's kind of fun. It's sort of like episode one. Bruce Bochy, he was a Tidewater Tide in the season that I write about. And you had Wade Boggs at Pawtucket and Cal Ripken at Rochester and guys like Vaughn Hayes in Charleston and Brett Butler in Richmond. And, you don't maybe have the future Hall of Famer on this Clippers team, but some really, really good players. And, they were certainly around a lot of future superstars for sure.
And at first glance, before I even zoomed in on the cover, when I first saw the book, the cards that are on the cover, the Columbus Clipper team set, it caught my eye, and I was dying to see who it was. And when I zoomed in, was able to see Buck Showalter. You kind of lose sight of the fact that, yeah, these guys actually did play the game. We think of them being in the mm-hmm. dugout. We think of them being the man sitting on the bench and making decisions. So it's cool to see these guys as players and talking about their playing days. So out of the guys that you were able to get, because you got nearly the entire team, was there one like white whale that you weren't able to track down or you weren't able to get a hold of?
I got a hold of most people that I felt like I really needed to talk to. There were certainly a few more. It kind of reached a point as a writer, again, I'm working full time, I'm married, I got three kids, and I had a book deal, which I was really lucky to get. And so at some point I kind of had to stop interviewing and start, really putting it down and writing it. I would say that the best story around that is a guy named Dave Coleman, who had been with the Red Sox 12 at-bats in 77. Again, those were amazing teams. And so, he wasn't able to stick. But he bounced around the minors for a few years. And, in 81, he's 30 years old. He almost doesn't report at the beginning of the season. And he winds up playing this incredible role in his kind of last gasp. He was really, really hard to get a hold of, not because I didn't know where he was, but because he really just wasn't that interested in participating. I finally ended up, I was reading something about a Coleman that had played golf at Ohio State, who his dad had briefly been in the majors, and was this kid was going to become a dentist and back in his home Dayton. And so I looked up dentists in Dayton, and I found the son, and the son talked to me and was able to kind of convince his dad to get involved, and then he wasn't. And I made a special trip all the way to Dayton, left a note, went to the dentist's office. I mean, it's just, I'm kind of rambling, but it was sort of like that. I just didn't give up. And one day I'm sitting at my regular job And my cell phone rings, and it's Dave Coleman. And we had a great interview. And, you know, I mean, I think that was a 2-year process. But I think he would have been the white whale that I would have really regretted if he hadn't, you know, decided to talk to me, because his story is so compelling, and is so kind of the archetype of, you know, this guy who is chasing that dream and kind of gives it one last gasp. And that was probably the best story around trying to track someone down.
Who do you feel, and I know it's probably hard to pick that, but who do you feel was able to fill in a lot of the holes for you in terms of the whole outlook of the season? Or is that too broad of a question? Was there really, was a lot of guys that gave you like a lot of great information? Or was there one person that was like, wow, this guy really changed the course of how I'm going to write this book based off of what he gave me?
There were definitely several like that. And there were a lot of, I mean, I must've done a good 90 interviews over time, not only with the players, but with broadcasters and coaches, right, and other people that were in the league. But I mentioned Marshall Brandt. The story about Marshall Brandt is I went to his house in Santa Rosa. I'd set up an interview with him, and I was hoping that we might get to talk for, you know, a couple hours. And I sat down and started talking to this guy who was my childhood hero, and we talked for 10 hours.
Wow,
and I mean, not
That's
just
awesome.
About baseball, but about life, and about, I mean, he opened up to me about really struggling. And while he's smiling and hitting all these home runs, he's really racked by self-doubt and, you know, am I going to be good enough? And I really related to a lot of that. And in addition to that, he also had just a lot of interesting things to say just about that season in his career that really filled a lot of gaps. Andre Robertson, a real compelling story, grows up in Orange, Texas. He's the first Black Little League player ever in Orange, Texas. And then he becomes the first Black scholarship player ever at the University of Texas, and the racism he had to deal with. So it wasn't just about filling in stuff about the season, but boy, these guys just had amazing stories. Another guy who spent some time with the Mets, John Pasella.
Yeah.
He was telling me about, you know, getting pulled over, the team bus with the Padres, getting pulled over on the highway in Arizona, right as spring training is ending, and he and Mumphrey get pulled off and you know, hey, we're sending you to the Yankees. And, you know, this is such a great story. And I'm hearing him tell me this story, and I'm like, has anybody ever written this down? This is amazing. And, you know, a lot of them really had those kind of stories. And, I could list many, many guys who were great helps and very supportive.
Yeah, you were 1 year off from having Don Mattingly a part of the book, too. So
he's one of those people that it would have been great to talk to. And I should have reached out to him just because he, you know, was, I mean, he's mentioned in the book.
Right.
And, you know, as somebody who, you know, was obviously on his way up. He was a little bit more of a left fielder beginning to transition to a little first base. But, he would have been great to talk to as well. He's one that, in hindsight, I wish I tried a little bit harder to see if I could land an interview with. But he came around in 82 to Columbus and obviously made his way up pretty quickly and went on to what I think should probably be a Hall of Fame career.
And it very well could be in just a matter of weeks, basically, at this point as we're recording
this.
But yeah, I mean, you know, and also kind of ties into Marshall Brandt is that, you know, Don Mattingly's coming in as an outfielder, but where does he end up playing? And, you know, that's they could have been on a collision course, the two of them, but I think that that's fascinating. Just right on the heels of this 81 Columbus Clippers team. Now, as we kind of get into the wrap-up, I'll tell you something funny. Another reason why I was connected to this book right away and looking over the roster, I had the ability to work very briefly for a minor league baseball team in the early 2000s, and the pitching coach of that team was a guy who had a cup of coffee with this 81 Columbus Clippers team, and it's Tom Filer. He was the pitching coach for the Lakewood Blue Claws when I started working for the Blue Claws in the early 2000s, and I thought that was amazing to see the roster and see that Tom Filer was in that. Literally, one game that he was there.
One game, yeah. He just kind of came and went, and they had they had a lot of people in and out, of course, maybe not like it is these days, but he was there for one appearance. There was another guy named Steve Taylor who had been a real phenom who was only pitched one game. It happened to be on national television on ESPN on the first night of the strike. But, you know, finding some of these guys, I mean, I tracked Steve Taylor down and explained who I was. And he said, wow, man, you had to dig really deep to find me, you know, because he went on to do really cool things. He, you know, was an elected representative in Delaware and helped get baseball to his town back there. And you know, again, everybody's got a story. And boy, these guys have some good ones for sure. Frank Verde is another guy, the manager, who was trying to get back himself. So yeah, I mean, lots of good stuff. And just sort of an homage to baseball and growing up and facing fears and that sort of thing.
It's very cool. So what do you have on tap next?
Spending a little bit more time with my kids and my wife, maybe. You know, I'm flattered that anybody would think that, you know, maybe I would do another one. If the right topic came along, I might. Don't tell my wife. Books take huge chunks of lives. I read that in the back of one of the books that inspired me in the credits for that, and I really related to it. I worked very hard on it. I had a great time. But, you know, I also work full time and married and three little ones. And so, yeah, I don't know. I like to think maybe I'll do another one someday, maybe about baseball. But nothing on the horizon just quite yet.
Well, the book, again, the title is Almost Yankees, The Summer of 81 and the Greatest Baseball Team You've Never Heard Of, the 1981 Columbus Clippers. Again, it's just a fascinating topic. I absolutely am so grateful that you came on to chat with me on the podcast about it. But before we wrap it up, I'm going to hand it over to you. Tell the listeners of Diamond Conversations where they can find anything and everything going on, not only with you and your writings and everything else, but also where they can get the book and get their hands on the best of J. David Herman.
Thank you so much for that. It's on Amazon.com, BarnesandNoble.com. University of Nebraska Press website is a great place to get it. They're a great publishing house. I really appreciate them giving me a first-time author with admittedly a bit of a niche topic, a chance. And so, you know, their website is certainly terrific. I have a Twitter account, @AlmostYankees, where I've been recreating the entire 1981 season day by day, along with other events of 81. I have a Facebook page, and it's been a blast. I got to throw out a first pitch in Columbus this year, getting to do podcasts like this, being on the radio. I'm just having a great time with it, and I really appreciate the chance to share about it with you.
Oh, my pleasure. I thank you, and also a huge thanks to University of Nebraska Press. I mean, they just were fantastic with everything and letting me finish the book, because I started it. I had to kind of speed read and get it done quickly, so I appreciate everything that they did, and thank you so much for taking the time tonight.
You bet, anytime.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
Place to Be Nation's JT Rosero and Chad Campbell here. We want to let you know that we have over 24 podcasts available on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and PlaceToBeNation.com. We now offer them to you on two great feeds. On the Place to Be Nation wrestling feed, we dive into topics running the gamut from today's WWE to the glory days of yesteryear and the ins and outs of the territory days. In addition to our full-length shows, we also deliver to you special pod blasts on topics old and new.
The Place to Be Nation pop feed is a veritable treasure trove of great content, offering tremendous shows covering the land of movies, television, life, comics, and sports, brought to you by the most knowledgeable and insightful folks in the podcast world.
You can find all these great shows, plus archives of our past podcasts from over the past 8 years as well, by subscribing to both feeds on iTunes. And while you're there, be sure to rate and leave feedback as well. All of these shows, plus others, available on PlaceToBeNation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus in-depth stretch projects, and much more. Be sure to support our site by using www.PlaceToBeNation.com/Amazon when doing your online shopping. We want to thank our friends at Boneheads, Wing Bar, ProWrestlingOnly.com, and TheHistoryOfWrestling.com as well. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr. PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture.